The Ticket.
D-E-A-T-H. What does that spell? Death, 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 death.
At 420, it's time for us to remember those who have recently passed away by taking a moment to consider how much they mattered and whether they have the credentials to gain a room in a three-bedroom apartment in the sky, otherwise known as trifecta time. Room 504 is open for business, I do believe, and completely vacant. Yes, Deej?
Yeah, Rick Derringer closed out room 503 last week.
Okay. So as we said, apologies to all that have died before today. And we had a big one today that moved him up to the front of the line. We're going to wait on Sly Stone until Donovan gets back from vacation. He's not with us right now. He's our seventh Supreme Court justice that gets to vote on these things. So earlier today, at sometime around noon, I think, or one, we found out that the great Brian Wilson died. He, the legendary face, voice, embodiment of the Beach Boys, the 60s supergroup that really were at the outset of a rock and roll movement, a musical movement that really transformed the West Coast and what people thought of the West Coast and romanticized the West Coast. Nobody did it like the Beach Boys, and they did it with hit records. Brian Wilson was born, and by the way, he passed away 82 from complications of dementia, which here's the kicker. It gives everyone hope that you can live a long life too, that this man made it to 82. Because his life and his stories and struggles and issues that he had with drugs after and mental illness and everything, the fact that he made it to 82 is a minor miracle.
No doubt. And also to make something clear, this isn't Bruce Bochy's closer with the Giants in 2010 and 11.
Second time issued that joke. He did he did it online. He did a
visual joke on Slack.
But this is, no, it's for our audience.
Like he had to reiterate
wasn't good
it on,
earlier.
It's,
no.
for, it's for the audience, and there's a lot of confusion Brian Wilson.
He got no response from us.
So he's fine.
Bob Slurm.
That Brian Wilson is fine.
Yeah, that's too bad.
So don't panic.
Because if he would have died, then we wouldn't have had those jokes. And so, you know.
Well, then it would have been the Beach Boys joke.
No, I'm saying like earlier.
Oh,
later.
I see. Yeah.
So Brian Wilson was born in 1942 in Inglewood, California, to Murray and Audrey Wilson. Remember the name Murray? They were, you know, basically just working, a working couple that had these, what would turn out to be the Beach Boys. They had two boys, Dennis and Carl, and Brian. And the dad was into music, and they all started trying to play instruments and things like that. And after a while, they started even writing their own songs, which was rare back in the day. And one time, Dennis told Brian, his brother, he went surfing one day, and he says, "You guys ought to write a song about surfing." And they did. And after a rehearsal, while the parents were out of town, they recorded their first song, Surfing.
If everybody had a nose across the USA, then everybody be surfing.
This is sung by Mike Love, their cousin.
You see them wearing their baggies.
Question.
Yep.
Was Mike Love at the Ventura Fairgrounds?
He was.
The night we saw them in 2022 with John Stamos?
Yeah.
Okay. But Brian Wilson was definitely not there.
No.
Yeah.
Near.
They hate each other now.
That's...
Well, one hates the other one a little more now. So this was kind of...
And that would
of...
be Kevin Love's dad, the Mike Love.
Nephew.
Turn his mic off.
What is he doing?
No, I'm serious.
Nephew.
He's right.
Yeah.
Nephew.
Why don't you guys get off me?
Sorry.
He's not continuing to drag sports into it. Yes.
Let's give him another 5 minutes.
Yeah. So back in 1962, they released this song. Capitol Records is like, whoa. And for the next 3 years.
What is this garbage? We need more of it.
Okay, at the time. They released 10 albums in 3 years. But dude,
10 in 3 years.
I'm telling you, this
full
was
length?
This was so normal back in the day.
Yeah, it was an assembly line back in those days.
You know, they're writing their own songs. They have writers that are writing their own stuff.
Like, how does your record even get traction if you have another one 2 months later?
It runs its course.
Yeah.
And like, I've told this story before, but there was a documentary on something U2 based in the 90s, and Bono was out to lunch with Mick Jagger. And he's looking at Mick Jagger, and he goes, he's looking at like the albums that they put out from the same time. And it's like 9 or 10 in 4 or 5 years. He's like, how did you do this? It takes us 3 years. And Mick's just looking at him. He's like, it's just what you did. Like, you didn't know any different. Everybody put out, like, you put out the record and you'd already finished writing your other album. And you're like, well, now when do we record this? Because music was such a blank slate back then too. They're obviously huge, beyond huge, right out of the chute. And the thing is that I never met anyone that was like a hardcore Beach Boys fan because their music, well, that loved them more than like the British Invasion bands. Because it almost seemed like it was bubblegum music, right? Compared to what the Beatles were doing and the Stones and the Who and
even Pet Sounds, which was their response to the Beatles, it still is bubblegum compared to the Beatles.
Certainly there was some USA cheering though for our best contender, right?
I think so, but it also it you know, my mom would tell the story of, she's like, I'd never been to California before, and you heard these songs and suddenly California became this thing. Like, they literally, like we talk about with, you know, JFK put Dallas on the map and then the Cowboys transformed everything. The Beach Boys put California, and in particular the beach communities, on the map. Everybody knew California as being Hollywood, but they never really put that beach thing together. And then it became this thing. And yeah, I mean, it pop culture made California this place where people are like, I got to go there. I've got to get out there and go see what's going on at these beaches with the girls and the surfing and all that.
And also their Cars angle was intriguing to the young men of the day, because my dad was in that group.
Yes.
Where she's
Deuce Coupe.
She's real fine, my 409 and that stuff, right?
Right, right. So, yes, Pet Sounds came out in 1966, and it elevated their music to this level that they had never had before. And right here, you can crank this up. And this is all Brian Wilson. He made the album. He got studio musicians to come play on it because he didn't like the way his brothers played.
This is a great song.
It's an awesome song, dude. French horns,
album.
Strings, timpani, sound effects, accompanied by guitar and bass and drums and all that. But the stuff that they did, the stacks of harmonies that he had on this album.
But it still was very American because it had that doo-wop kind of vibe.
It did. Everything. Okay, so Good Vibrations off this became massive.
Another awesome song.
I love the colorful. To me, this is about as modern as they ever got. And cutting edge.
Yeah.
Like, this is cool. Crank this, Glenn.
This was off a later album.
Oh, it was?
Yeah, Smiley Smile.
Okay, all right. Oh, this is off the Smile? Okay. That theremin.
Yeah, I could have lived without that.
The theremin?
Yeah.
It's kind of cool, though. Most...
God Only Knows was on Pet Sounds,
yeah,
right?
So most people consider God Only Knows their masterpiece. And Brian Wilson's masterpiece.
It's awesome.
I do too. I think this is a...
You only like it because it says God in it.
Oh, shut up.
That's a weird thing to
sure
say.
It sucks.
I think it's an awesome song.
This is his masterpiece right here.
always love you. But long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you.
It's pretty much the standard of love songs, of like incredible love songs.
Yeah, this is a picture montage at the wedding reception standard, right?
Yeah. And we have the isolated harmonies from the end and just a reminder that he was 23 when he did this.
God only knows what I'd be without.
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 That's incredible.
It is.
It's haunting.
He was 23. So
I've never heard this before. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's so cool. He was, I mean, you Bob Dylan and Paul McCartney and Mick Jagger and all these guys that were part of that scene back then, when Pet Sounds came out and this song in particular came out, they were like, we're cooked. Like, they have cracked the code and this guy has turned into this genius while we're all flailing around doing meaningless stuff.
It pushed the Beatles to make Sgt. Pepper, which is insane.
Yeah, and I saw on Rolling Stone's list of greatest albums ever, even the most updated one, Sgt. Pepper is one and Pet Sounds is two. And so this album in particular just got rave reviews, as it should have. And then things fell apart.
Drugs.
He had a lot of mental issues that at the time weren't very well diagnosed, because most people that had mental issues at all, they were just thrown in a loony bin. And he had many, many issues. And to try to fight them off, he developed a drug habit that rivaled no one.
He was addicted to alcohol, cigarettes, food. He got giant.
Right.
Same.
And heroin.
Yeah.
Pills. Cocaine. Everything.
Yeah. He was a massive drug addict. He enlisted the help of this therapist. I don't even know what you want to call him. And Landy was his last name. I can't remember his
Eugene.
First. Eugene, that's right. And this guy in the mid-70s started basically living with him and shutting out the entire family. Everybody in his family was completely shut out so this guy could work his magic with him. And in the long term, Brian Wilson trusted this guy more than anybody, got divorced from his wife, blah, blah, blah. But he started giving this guy songwriting credits. He started giving him unnecessary payments of his, what was fortune that was slowly running out, publishing rights, everything. And this went on all throughout the 80s until his family finally, I mean, it sounded like it was some sort of Britney Spears custodialship, where this guy just controlled everything that he did. And yeah, in the meantime, he was all fat, gross, and he had all these really radical ideas of how to fix Brian Wilson, and they kicked him out of the band completely in the early 80s because he was just so lost. And it was a really sad story, and until
tried
he
to
started
replace him
his,
with John Stamos.
Yes. Until he started his comeback, you know, 25 years ago or so, he was just completely lost. He charged Wilson $35,000 a month.
Mm.
And just drained him of everything. So he did make a comeback. A lot of people I know went and saw some of his shows back in the day, in the last 25 years or 30 years. And, you know, it was tough watching Brian Wilson try to navigate his way around a stage, especially in the last 15 years. But then he later on got dementia, and just things went sideways from there. But
I'm sorry, I'm looking at his wiki, and they're talking about some recording sessions that he did in the early 80s. And to motivate him, they would bring him cocaine and McDonald's. And they were known as the hamburger sessions.
God, dude. to motivate him. But he will go down as one of the true geniuses in the history of rock and roll. His brother drowned in the early 80s. One of the brothers was like friends with Manson. I can't remember which one. The other brother died of lung cancer in the 90s. Like, there was a, the fact that he outlived his brothers too is just crazy town. But Brian Wilson dead today at the age of 82 years old.
Dang.
Lando?
Worthy.
Deej?
Yep.
Ham?
Most worthy.
Of course. So in.
In indeed. He will start which room?
504? 504.
504. 504.